Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Hope you stick around today for the entire program. I have a great conversation with Father Andrew Young, home from serving as a military chaplain in the Navy, going to be the pastor at St. Lambert's. He relays a number of his experiences as a chaplain. I think you'll find it very interesting today. Gene Young will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Donna Cannon with the first and second reading. Father Grant Lacey with the gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Jeremiah. Jeremiah said, I hear the whisperings of many, terror on every side. Denounce, let us denounce him. All those who were my friends are on the watch for any misstep of mine. Perhaps he will be trapped. Then we can prevail and take our vengeance on him. But the Lord is with me like a mighty champion. My persecutors will stumble. They will not triumph. In their failure, they will be put to utter shame, to lasting, unforgettable confusion. O Lord of hosts, you who test the just, who probe the mind and heart, let me witness the vengeance you take on them. For to you I have entrusted my cause. Sing to the Lord, praise the Lord, for he has rescued the life of the poor from the power of the wicked. The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Romans. Brothers and sisters, through one man sin entered the world, and through sin death. And thus death came to all men, inasmuch as all sinned. For up to the time of the law, sin was in the world, though sin is not accounted when there is no law. But death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who did not sin, after the pattern of the trespass of Adam, who is the type of the one who was to come. But the gift is not like transgression. For if by transgression of the one the many died, how much more did the grace of God and the gracious gift of the one man, Jesus Christ, overflow for the many? The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to the 12, Fear no one. Nothing is concealed that will not be revealed, nor secret that will not be known. What I say to you in the darkness, speak in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in Gehenna. Are not two sparrows sold for a small coin? Yet not one of them falls to the ground without your Father's knowledge. Even all the hairs of your head are counted. So do not be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. Everyone who acknowledges me before others, I will acknowledge before my heavenly Father. But whoever denies me before others, I will deny before my heavenly Father. The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, 14 religious sisters from two different communities are celebrating their jubilees of profession this year. From the Presentation Sisters community in Aberdeen, seven sisters will be celebrating jubilees. Celebrating their 70th jubilees are Sister Elizabeth Rumley, Sister Virginia Hallauer, and Sister Margaret Ann Talbot. Celebrating their 60th jubilees from the Presentation Sisters community are Sister Catherine Fegan, Sister Francine Evans, and Sister Gail Voltz. Sister Janice Klein is celebrating her 50th jubilee of profession this year. From the Benedictine community at Mother of God Monastery in Watertown, Sister Evelyn Sen, Sister Judine Seeberger, and Sister Michaeline Janser are celebrating their 70th jubilees. Sister Yvonne Marie Linster, Sister Adele Sautner, Sister Ramona Fallon, and Sister Johanna Schumacher are each celebrating their 60th Jubilee of Profession. You can read and see more about the Religious Sisters' Jubilees in the June edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, faith and films have been lifelong obsessions for director Martin Scorsese, obsessions that he said have given him moments of peace amid turmoil, but also challenges and frustrations that in hindsight he will accept as lessons in humility. Quoting, for me, the stories have always been about how we should live, who we are, and have a lot to do with love, trust, and betrayal, he said, explaining that those themes have been with him since his boyhood spent in the rambunctious tenements of New York City and in the peace of the city's St. Patrick's Old Cathedral, where he was an altar server. Scorsese spoke this week in Quebec City at a joint session of the Catholic Press Association's Catholic Media Convention and the World Congress of CIGNUS, the International Association of Catholic Media Professionals. Before Scorsese answered questions posed by author Paul Ely, conference participants watched his film Silence, which is based on the novel by Shasuka Endo. The book and film are a fictionalized account of the persecution of Christians in 17th century Japan. The central figures are Jesuit missionaries who are ordered to deny the faith or face death after witnessing the death of their parishioners. In launching this year's Fortnight for Freedom, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is calling for renewed dedication to protecting religious freedom. Freedom for Mission is the theme of the 2017 Fortnight for Freedom, which takes place starting this past week, June 21st through July 4th. The 14-day observance of action, education, and prayer focused on religious freedom began in 2012, stemming from a 12-page statement released that June by the Bishop's Ad Hoc Committee for Religious Liberty, titled Our First, Most Cherished Liberty. The U.S. bishops recently voted to make the Ad Hoc Committee permanent. It had been chaired since its creation by Baltimore Archbishop William E. Lurie. The Archbishop opens the fortnight by celebrating an evening mass June 21st this past week at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary in Baltimore. He then celebrated a special fortnight mass, or will I should say, on July 3rd in Orlando, Florida during the U.S. Bishop's Convocation of Catholic Leaders. Hillary Burns, Assistant General Counsel for the USCCB, works with the bishops on protecting religious liberties from government infringement, which is the focus of the fortnight. Burns said the media tends to hide the fact that religious freedom is an actual issue, leaving people reluctant to talk about threats to that freedom. In a related item, the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and the chairman of the Bishops' Migration and International Policy Committees urged Secretary of Homeland Security John Kelly to defer deportation of Chaldean Christians and others arrested recently. They made the comments in a letter to Kelly in response to the apprehension of Iraqis in the Detroit area and near Nashville, Tennessee, by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. More than 100 were arrested, including Chaldean Christians and Shiite Muslims. They were placed in federal custody in Youngstown, Ohio, and faced deportation, that is, this past week. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
Very good, Gene. Thanks for the news. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Father Andrew Young, back in the Diocese of Sioux Falls, soon to be the pastor at St. Lambert's. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's great to have you back home. And for those that aren't familiar with your wonderful journey, really the whole of it, the whole of your life journey, which I think is so fascinating. You've been away for the last couple of years being a chaplain in the Navy.
I have been, yes. So I've had some, prior military service and then eventually going to seminary and then, coming and serving in the Diocese of Sioux Falls for 3 years and taking 2 years and going and serving back in the military as a chaplain, as a Catholic priest. It was an experience. Just trying to serve our men and women who are wearing the uniform and bringing the faith to them.
Yeah, and what I love about this story is that firsthand, because of your own military experience, the power of a chaplain, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, there's lots of different chaplains in the military. You have Protestant chaplains, Jewish chaplains, imams in the Muslim faith, but really the Catholic, really in the military itself, is very pretty Catholic. I mean, you look at the Marine Corps is about 50% Catholic.
Wow.
And the thing is, they also seem to practice their faith. They especially when they're away from home. It's like anything, when you're away from your comfort zone, sometimes the first person you turn to is your faith and turn to God. And so, having been in the Marine Corps and been in parts of the world where it's lonely and there's danger. Having the priest there was important. Having the sacraments because without the priest, there's no confession, there's no sacraments.
Do you attribute part of your own vocation story to that experience that you had, either in military or maybe perhaps dealing with a Catholic chaplain?
Yeah, I do. I think, most of my friends in the military were the chaplains, Catholic or Protestant. They seemed to be the closest ones. And I think eventually I made the decision to kind of follow that call of God because of my experience and to see the good that the chaplain can do, to bring the faith, to bring the sacraments, and to bring that comfort, which in those type of situations, especially combat, no one else can really give you that comfort except for Christ. And yeah. So the chaplain does have the priest does have a very specific role there. And it's funny, since I've been back, everyone always said, so what do you do? Like, what do you do all day, you know, on a ship? Or what do you do all day? Because it, you know, you, trying to put how priests work in every day in a parish on a ship, it is different. I mean, you do have different things you do. You know, you're required to do stuff as a military officer, but and also, you know, feed your flock.
Yeah. So, you're still a pastor. You're just a pastor in a different way, right?
Yes. I'm a pastor of like lots of different ships. When I was deployed, I was on the USS Wasp, and I was a Catholic priest on board. We had three other Protestant chaplains on board. But there were all the ships that came near our ship, because we had helicopters on board. None of them had Catholic priests. They had chaplains, but they didn't have Catholic priests. So they would always, whenever a ship got near, it was always funny because in the mornings they had a VTC, which is a video teleconference with the generals and the admirals. And then one of the first questions always asked was, have you gotten your priest to the USS, whatever? Because they wanted that ship, maybe hadn't had a priest for, you know, 4 or 5 months, to have mass. And so it was always a priority to those. And a lot of the leadership in the Marine Corps and the Navy is Catholic. And so mm-hmm. they knew the need of, and what a chaplain brings to the morale of a ship and the morale of the Marines and sailors, that faith is an important part. And even in our world today, where it seems like we take God out of everything, you know, there's still a place for God in the military. They still see the place of the chaplain.
I would think maybe particularly they see the need for their faith when you have the potential of being in harm's way. It kind of brings a different reality to you, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I mean, there's, you know, when we were over there, that a lot of our pilots were doing missions over Libya, you know, and having pilots come to Mass on Sunday who had been flying over the Libya, you know, it's they come with a different perspective. You know, they come with knowing that, you know, their own need of Christ in their life, you know, mm-hmm. and the dangers they face on a daily basis, you know, literally flying over a country that would like to shoot you down,
yeah,
and knowing that their wife and children or husband and children are back home. It definitely put them in a different place and kind of, you know, even if they weren't practicing their faith before that, you know, that their faith is important. And the only one you could really rely on in those times was on Christ.
You know, maybe we ought to just review for folks that aren't particularly familiar with how the chaplaincy programs and how it's kind of structured these days. There's actually an archdiocese for the military, which seeks to serve Catholics who are in the military. Certainly in this country, but really all over the world.
Correct.
So your service was through that entity, is that right?
So I was sponsored by the Archdiocese of Military Services out of Washington, D.C. And we have an Archbishop Bank. There's four bishops that fall underneath him. And then they provide Catholic priests for the Army, Navy, the Air Force. And so we are spread out with the different services. And again, you know, you can minister to anyone that comes near to you. Because really nowadays, the only ships that have Catholic priests are aircraft carriers. I think they're going to strictly aircraft carriers now, and primarily because most sailors and Marines are on those ships, and they have capabilities to get you off, to put you in other ships, put you in other places so you can minister to those people. But yeah, we're pretty, you know, we don't have a lot of numbers. You know, there's not a lot of Catholic priests left. It's a pretty... it's a strenuous environment because you're not only the Catholic priest, but you also have your military, you know, as an officer, you have to do things, you know, as a military officer, to a naval officer. So it's, you are pulled in a lot of ways and there can be challenges, you know, with how we minister or how we're allowed to minister, because we do fall under, when I'm in the Navy, I fall under, you know, people who aren't Catholic. You know, so my idea of ministry and the faithful might be different than their perspective. So.
Yeah.
So there's challenges, but it's good. I mean, it
creates all kinds of unique challenges, I'm sure, just in the day-to-day things that again, at home, we would take for granted.
And then even though I was a Catholic priest, anyone could come to me for, I could counsel anybody. I had sailors, you know, who didn't believe in God at all, you know, or sailors that were Muslim or whatever, and they'd, you know, come for counseling. So one of the roles of the chaplains is to provide for his own flock, which would be the Catholics, but also to minister to everybody. And so yeah, we'd minister to variety of people. So
talk about the numbers a little bit, because the Wasp itself is a large ship, mm-hmm. and then of course it has accompanying ships, as you mentioned. What do you suppose the total of all that is?
So I think the Wasp had about nearly 5,000 on board, and then we would the other ships had anywhere from the two ships that went with us specifically, they had about 1,000 on board each. And then all of the destroyers and cruisers that were just kind of passing by, they had maybe 500, you know, so it was, so it got to be a, you know, a large grouping of, and it was funny because when I would go to another ship, I went to a couple, I went to the USS Sullivan's twice. I went to a couple of ships twice. And so it's funny how you create that relationship. And they were all, it was crazy when you get off there, the helicopter and the lay leader, because you have a Catholic lay leader on every ship. He's there to greet you and take you to the chapel, whatever the chapel might be that day. It might be a hallway. Who knows what the chapel is going to be that day, because not every ship has the capability for a chapel. But the people were already there waiting, and they were so excited to have the priest aboard. It meant a lot to them. Yeah. You could just see how it fulfilled them in a way that was unbelievable to think that they would be that excited to have a Catholic priest come on board.
So you become almost like, if we think back to the early days of South Dakota, and we had itinerant preachers who would go from place to place ministering to people because they didn't have a priest on a regular basis. You've become kind of an itinerant missionary preacher, right?
Very much a missionary.
Wow. Yeah.
Never know what you're going to find. Never know what's going to be provided. Like I had a backpack with, I had my, you know, my vestments in there. I had the bread, I had the wine, you know, I'd bring everything with me because I had no idea what the ship might have. And you know, on one ship, I put a box in the ground. I basically knelt during mass because there was no table big enough to say mass. I mean, and that was mass, you know, yeah. I like, sat around in a circle. But it was mass. I mean, Christ was present.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the important thing to remember, right? Is mm-hmm. that you can bring Christ to those people regardless of the circumstances. Right.
It always reminds me, like this last weekend we had Corpus Christi, and it's always, the meaning of mass. You know, it's not about who you get off the helicopter. It didn't matter if it was Father Young or Father whoever. All it mattered was the priest mm-hmm. that could bring them the thing that they needed the most, which was the sacraments, which was the Eucharist. And that's all they cared about. And so kind of the same thing with the preachers went around. Didn't matter who it was just a matter that it was a priest, and that priest had the faculties and, you know, was ordained to bring them Christ.
You're a native of Mitchell, and I know you have an affection for an earlier priest that served from Mitchell, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Retell that story a little bit, if you would.
He was the first pastor of Mitchell, of Holy Family, and he was an army chaplain. And World War One, and he was called up towards the. He was Pastor Mitchell, but they needed chaplains in the army to serve the hundreds and thousands of soldiers that were overseas fighting the Great War. And so he went, and actually, I believe he died like 3 days before the war was actually over. And so when I was in seminary in Italy. I had read his story and I'd seen the pictures, and because I was going through the archives, the Holy Family with my cousin, and no one really knew we had our first pastor, you know, was a chaplain, and that right. he went to Europe and died there, and he was given medals for his heroic actions, and so when I was in Italy, I went for one weekend. We had a long weekend, and I chose to go to France to find his grave, and I said I'd take a picture of this grave from my parish, I mean, just that sacrifice and to leave everything behind and go and you know, and to serve those men and women in uniform, because they don't, you know, there's no one to serve them, you know, and it can be a need.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm sure he was on your mind a lot.
He was. Yeah.
As you were doing your service.
Yeah. In times of being, you know, separated and away and. Because we were deployed for 6 months and only had 5 days in a Liberty port. So we were at sea a long time.
That is a long time.
We used to get 10 to 15 guys for daily, guys and girls for daily mass, and in great crowds on the weekends. We had a choir, had a piano player, had a cantor. We had a men's group that met every Sunday. About 10 of us met, and it was great. And a couple of, you know, we had three adult baptisms, you know, 12 confirmations and about 10 first communions. So people that maybe are away from their faith, they realize that, hey, my faith is important, and this is an opportunity. I'm on a ship for 6 months.
Right.
And I got a priest right here.
Yeah.
You know, I can get my confirmation. I can get my first communion, or I can become baptized and be a follower of Christ.
We were privileged to see some pictures that you sent from time to time, and if people follow the Bishop's Bulletin, they might have seen one or two of them that we were able to sneak in there. But some of those were great moments, and one of them I loved was you were actually sort of, I don't know what the right term is. But you were celebrating Mass, and others were viewing it through this system. What's it called? VTC?
VTC, yeah, Visual Teleconference.
Yeah, so they're participating as best they can.
Yeah.
It's almost like a naval version of right. the TV Mass, right?
Yeah, and that's what we tried to do, because there was some places that there were too many ships out there, we just couldn't get, and some of them were too far away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a VTC Mass, I think 3 or 4 times we did it. And so I was in the Mediterranean Sea, and I was saying Mass, and it's basically TV, it's live TV, basically, over the satellites. And so there were people in the Red Sea, there were people in the Persian Gulf, ships in the Persian Gulf, Red Sea, out by Ukraine, the Black Sea, were all watching Mass.
Yeah.
And participating as best they could with us. And yeah. So I had this little piano player, and he played the piano, and it was always hard because of the delay, because they could hear me and I could hear them, but we were delayed, so we couldn't really speak together. So,
right, right.
So it made singing interesting.
The Our Father was probably a real challenge.
But it was, and that's kind of the way the Navy was saying, hey, well, we know we can't reach all these people, so at least they can attend Mass by watching it on a live feed.
I would guess the Navy and the other military branches understand the importance of what this can mean to somebody who is as far away from home as they are, on deployment for a lengthy period of time, to be able to access the sacraments and their faith. They recognize that, huh?
They do. It's and even in the Navy, you know, we have every night at 9:55, we have a prayer, which is about 40-second prayer, minute prayer, that's said over the one MC that goes throughout the whole ship. And it's a tradition the Navy's had from the very beginning. And you think this day and age, it might have been kicked, you know,
yeah,
stopped.
Kicked to the curb.
But,
yep.
But no, we still have. So every night, one of the chaplains climbed all the way to the bridge. And from the bridge where we drive the ship, you know, we'd pause for about a minute and have a prayer.
Yeah.
And it was always funny because sailors listened to the prayers. The Marines listened because they would comment later on because they got to know that the 4 different chaplains are 4 different voices.
They knew
who it was.
They knew who it was.
And one would always tell a story and one would always know. And so they knew who we were. And they listened to those prayers. I mean, and many times it touched them, you know, or it gave them comfort in maybe a time of loneliness or of being away.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we have a few minutes left this morning, and I wanted to talk just a little bit about the accident that happened last week, obviously after you have left service. But I'm sure something like that is hard to hear about, and I can only imagine how important a chaplain would have been in a circumstance like that.
Yeah, those 7 sailors. So, you know, they get hit by the basically a merchant vessel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small ship, and that was a destroyer, and so it was almost like a family. I mean, the only destroyers had about 400 sailors on board, and probably with those sailors, they probably were trapped in there and they probably drowned. Is what probably happened to them. And again, you know, and they are so close. It is a family, and to lose your shipmates, and even if you don't know them, they still know that they've given part of their life to serve their country. You know, and most of them probably had loved ones back. Or they all had loved ones back home with their parents or wives, and it is hard. It's hard to hear, especially when you think that maybe some of them might be Catholic, and they probably were at sea. They could have been out at sea for months, and maybe never had access to the sacraments,
right?
You know, because there's just not priests to go around, and so anytime you see service members who die, serving their country. You know, they've given up a lot of their life to serve the country, but then they give their the ultimate sacrifice. It's because they're young. I mean, I always look back at the sailors I ministered to, and I don't know what they got from me, but I learned a lot from them, you know, in their stories and their the heartaches that they went through, and for many of them it was the military was the Navy was their last hope at being something,
yeah,
you know, and because many times they were written off by society or maybe the life they'd lived before, and it was kind of their chance to, you know, to one last gasp that I can be somebody,
yeah.
You know, and so I have great respect for them and for the sacrifice they make.
We certainly pray for their souls and all those that serve and I know death comes to us all at different points, and I would suspect even. You know, with a group of the size that you were dealing with, there could easily have been natural deaths that would happen, and I know that's an important role for the chaplains, yeah. to deal with that.
And we did, so we were deployed. We had a 19-year-old; he committed suicide on board the ship.
Mm.
And we were deployed, and again, you know, you see how that affects, you know, because it wasn't just, you know, it was all the people that knew him,
right?
You know, and how we got to that point, you know, who knows? But those are the effects, you know, and because we are a family, you know, we all kind of there for the same reasons, you know, to serve our country, and the chaplain is important because people, you know, they you know, again, even if you have no faith at all, you know, they can go to the chaplain, and the chaplain will care for them, will talk to them, and give them hope, you know, even if they don't believe in God.
Right.
A chaplain is still a person they go to, they can trust, and that gives them some sort of hope in times of trial.
Well, we're grateful that you served. We're probably even a little more grateful that you're back home. just in the last minute or so, say a little bit about your work that you're going to be doing at St. Lambert's.
I'm going to be the new pastor at St. Lambert's. So I'm taking over for Father John Rutten, who were classmates together in seminary.
Amazing.
And going to have an associate, Father Joe Schulten, who is getting back from a brand new priest.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, St. Lambert's, I've heard, and it's a great parish. I have a niece and nephew that go to school there, so they better be good.
That?
They better be good at school.
How about that?
They better not come to the priest's office. No, but it'll be great. It's a family parish, and I'm excited to be back in South Dakota, you know, and, you know, I miss parish life. I mean, I love the military. I love serving my country, and if I was asked to do it again, I would do it again. You know, I there's a need. I had a big need for that, but I miss families. I miss the parish life, and all that it feeds the priest too in a different way. So,
well, you're in a great line of those that have gone from this diocese, served, come back home. I think we've done our share. At least I'd like to think our diocese has done our share. Not that we don't need to continue to do it, but grateful for your service. And again, grateful to have you back home, Father Andy Young.
Great. Thank you.
Just a few seconds left this morning, Gene. A couple things to talk about. You referenced the Martin Scorsese thing. That was at the Catholic press gathering.
That's always a great thing. I haven't been for several years, but it's always a great opportunity to advance your professionalism, to hear different points of view from different people on different issues. It is a great, great annual event.
Yeah, good. Good that they get together. And also wanted to reference that the Catholic convocation you mentioned. We have delegates going from the Diocese of Sioux Falls.
I think it's also on Bishop Swain's public calendar. He's anticipating going to that. That's going to be a big deal too.
I think so, and we'll be interested to see some of the results that come out of that. Probably take a while for that to happen, but hopefully some good things that will develop coming out of that convocation.
It's an exciting time.
Very good. Well, that's our time for Catholic Views this morning. Thanks for joining us, and please make sure you join us again next Sunday morning.